You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You're a master tech at Jaguar.
Mm-hmm.
And then what is the next step in Tom Nenthal's life?
He's got two kids, a missus that has decided that she wants to be a stay-at-home mum, and in a financial situation where every month when he gets his wages, he's about 500 or 600 quid a month behind.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Auto Addicts podcast, and welcome to Series 2, Episode number 2. Now, before we get on with the podcast, a massive thank you to everyone who emailed and messaged. Overwhelming response. Everyone is over the moon that we're back. And you know what? After a two-month break, so are we. How's it feel, Rory? Back in the hot seat?
Yes, it's very weird, isn't it? It's been 2 months, haven't had to do this.
Yeah.
And now I'm looking at someone who doesn't look very much like Taylor at the moment.
No. It's Mr. Tom Nenthal. He's our special guest.
I thought we could try and make him laugh and then people could guess.
Oh, what,
then,
Shit. Okay.
Oh, it's obviously Tom.
How you doing, Tom?
Yeah. I'm also very glad that you lot are working again, because you've been really, really bothering me a lot the last couple of months. You've had nothing to do. Sweeping the floor, anything to earn a couple of quid.
Absolutely right. Now, for people who don't know you, Tom, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
My name's Tom Nenthal, and I am a mechanic who runs a Jaguar Land Rover repair business.
Do you want to correct that?
Yeah, that's not correct anymore, Tom, is it?
What
really?
Do you mean?
You said I'm a mechanic and I run...
Well, I started out as a mechanic.
And also, he's not even that anymore, let's face it. Tom's practically a YouTuber these days.
Yeah.
He's put his hat up and he's now just, I'm an influencer.
I think if you look on his CV, it'll probably say YouTuber/entrepreneur.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I've never quite felt an entrepreneur. I've always felt like a chap that's ended up, you know, been a, you know, good at fixing cars and ended up running a business by default.
Yeah.
That's the way.
But not anymore, myself. Tom. When's the last time you had a bit of oil underneath your fingernails? I look at your fingernails, they're actually quite dirty. So fair play. Fair play, Tom.
I do still like to get my hands dirty.
You do indeed.
So does Meg, obviously.
Yeah.
She wouldn't like it if my
she
hands
does.
Were too
she
clean.
Does the heavy lifting in the relationship, doesn't she?
Without a doubt, yeah.
Meg is Tom's wife, if you haven't guessed that.
Yes, yes. Right, before we get into the podcast, we've got a lot to get through, actually. Very exciting one. What have we all been up to? Rory, let's get started with you. How's your week been?
It's been all right. We've filmed pretty much all of the content that we had planned for the 2 month gap.
Yeah.
So we've got that all filmed now. So yeah, you guys have obviously seen the Yeti. And then the Alpha episode is coming out tomorrow, which I'm very excited about.
Yeah.
We went over to the Isle of Wight for that, and there was a little bit of noise coming from Alex's
Alpha. A little bit?
Yeah.
I'm surprised I didn't get thrown off the country.
Yeah, it was very loud. But yeah, I remember I was standing there just trying to do these flybys, and I was just getting deafened by you just going past, just going, oh my God, that's so loud.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, very excited for you guys to see that. Anything else, Rory?
Mower update.
So for people who don't know about the mower.
So the mower went away for hibernation.
Yeah.
It's my robot.
Bit like us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's my robot lawnmower.
Mm.
And it's all autonomous. It's GPS controlled. Yeah. So I don't even need to do boundaries. Love it.
Yeah.
Love it, love it, love it. Anyway. It's now gone out, and it had to go away for winter, and it's come back out, and it's just cutting the lawns again everywhere. Mm. Just looks fresh. Goes out 3 times a week. It's brilliant. Nice.
Isn't it a bit early, Rory?
No, Tom. It's never too early.
Never
to
too
cut
early.
Never
too early to have your lawn cut.
Yes,
that's okay. What I mean.
And robot vacuums and lawnmowers are great, aren't they, Alex?
Have you got a robot vacuum cleaner?
I don't.
So, all right. I didn't want to touch on this topic, all right, but yesterday I came home, right, to my wife and my child. I open up my front door
and I look on the floor and everything is clean. And then I go in the living room and all of the tables and all of the shit that is usually on the floor mm-hmm. is on the sofa. And I'm like, why is everything floating? And then I hear this little... And I'm like, I know exactly what's happened here. I've been done over by my wife.
Yeah.
And I look behind me in the dining room and there's this little oofy thing that's taken itself back to its little hiding hole. And it says, no emptying the dirty water. And you know what? I've given it a name, Tom.
Go on then. What you called it?
I've called it Rory.
Oh.
Do you know why?
Why?
Because it's annoying, yeah. but actually quite useful to have around. So yeah, I'm actually quite loving my little Luffy.
So what about the stairs?
So no,
I haven't thrown it down the stairs yet, Tom. I'll give that a go tonight.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just, you know, I'm intrigued because obviously you've got a... Is it one of those ones that goes around if it bumps into things?
Yes.
Or is it one that's actually mapped your house?
No, it maps the house. He's got the nice one. It does map the house.
Yeah. So will it then map upstairs?
No. How is it meant to get upstairs, Tom?
Well, no, you carry it up there. Well, clearly, don't you, Rory?
No one does that.
What you do is you get your drone and the
drone lifts it.
Your fly thing.
Oh, my God.
So what Alex doesn't know is Rianne's actually already ordered another one.
Right.
That one's going upstairs.
Yeah. And for every 14 stairs, there's another Oofy.
There's a mini one that sits on each step.
Yeah, they are literally going to take over the house, aren't they?
Yeah.
But yeah, it sweeps, right? And it also does the wet, backy
mopping.
Yep. Yeah. It's got these little arms that come out and just flap about. It's actually quite cute. And it went underneath my sofa and I was like, oh, I've not seen under there for a while. And I was like on my hands and knees, just following it around. I was like, you go, girl. Well, you go, Rory.
I was getting pictures from Rianne. That was just pictures of Alex just watching his new robot vacuum going.
Yeah. Is it actually, does it do a good job?
It actually does quite a good job. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, genuinely.
All right.
Unless you like vomit all over the floor or shit.
The thing you've got to remember, because they go out regularly, unlike, you know, when you usually do your vacuuming maybe like once every 2 weeks.
This is such a middle-aged podcast.
It is. We'll talk about maths next. but these go out a lot more regularly. So then they're only picking up like a minute amount each time.
Because they're doing it consistently. Yeah.
It's like the robot lawnmower. It goes out 3 times, so it doesn't actually need to collect anything.
Yeah. I'm one of those families now.
Yeah.
I don't know if I like it or not.
You like it.
Okay, right.
I ever managed was about 9 or 10 months in between hoovering.
Really?
Yeah. It was when I was living with some friends. And Meg wasn't my wife at the time. She's my girlfriend.
And her
intolerance of dirt got the better of her. So she brought a hoover around and hoovered our house.
Oh, God, poor Meg.
What did the floor look like after 9 months?
Well, it was quite... What actually happened was the dust and the mess in the hallway was so deep that we wore a path in the dirt.
So the
sides of the hallway carpet... Yeah. were sort of like really infested, but then actually up the middle of it where you walk wasn't too bad because we were walking there, so we cleared it.
Lovely.
Your
carpet was alive, was it?
It was alive, yeah.
And it had its own ozone layer and everything.
Meg couldn't stand it anymore. So
fair play.
Did she have to do like one room, then empty the vacuum, one room, then
it was a while ago.
apart from coming home and being confronted by Rory, which was very upsetting, this week's been very good.
Okay.
Obviously drove the Yeti round. Yeah, that everyone saw last week. And Tom, I wanted to talk about, you know, you handing me the keys to your race car.
Oh, right.
Which was a real privilege. So I just wanted to thank you for that. I had a really, really good time.
So I nearly forgot, didn't I? Because we did speak about...
Yeah.
I think Rory was baiting me, wasn't he? Let's face it, that's what he was doing.
I thought you intentionally forgot and I didn't want to ask you if I could drive.
Yeah. And then I just pulled up by the trailer and then Rory said, oh, you haven't got the guts to let Alex drive your car.
He didn't say guts, did he? He said balls.
Did he say balls?
I think he screamed at you as well. Yeah. You were like, oh, I'll show him.
But I did want you to have a drive in the car anyway. Yeah. So you did jump in the driver's seat.
I did, and it was really good.
And I had to sit in the passenger seat.
Well, you didn't have to, but you chose to.
Well, and I wanted to make sure, you know, I need to protect my investment. I've invested heavily in that car.
Tom, I thought you meant me being the investor.
No, not at all.
Tom, how are you as a passenger in a car?
I'm generally not good. it's not so bad when you're at little circuits or where I know where I'm going. But like, as an example, when Taylor took me around the Nürburgring, I had no idea where I was going.
No.
And you're going over fast crest. You don't know what's coming. And it was, that freaked me out. Yeah. So Alex did freak me out a couple of times.
What? But it's a little circuit. You knew where you were going.
It wasn't so much about the... It was more about the application of your driving talents that worried me. And
worried is a very strong word here, Tom.
Overconfident, I would call it. The whole front end of the car started moving and undulating. And you were like a split second away from the thing flipping round on you.
No.
It would, and I promise you, because I've done it.
Well, you did it on track. We've actually got...
Yeah, we do have video of that. Yeah.
But not... That's coming out of a corner. That's different. That's the rear end. When you lose the front end on that due to braking, the whole car will just... If you load up the front too much and the rear end breaks away,
you were
really close to the rear end losing traction. He did make me flinch.
Really?
Yeah.
In a good way?
Yeah, I clenched.
But were you a little bit impressed or were you like, oh, I'm going
No. I've got to give it credit where credit's due. I know you've been driving the Yeti around there.
Yeah.
You know, considering you've never driven the car before and all the rest of it, you know, you're one of those drivers that I would describe as overconfident, and you're going to crash, right? Like, you know, but
well, I've taken a leaf out of your book, Tom.
No,
is if I'm not winning, I'm crashing trying to win.
Yeah. But I know that car inside out. So I'm pushing little bit. So I'm one of those drivers that will take their time, you know, just a few laps, let's get faster and faster and faster and faster and find the limit.
That was like lap three.
Three laps. You're like, and you're braking later than I was. And I'm like, what's he doing?
Are we going to talk about Alex's seating position in the car as well?
Oh yeah, he did need a little bit of padding as well.
That's why, because my seating position was all wrong.
Yeah.
I had two cushions behind me.
You had two cushions and a coat behind you.
And a coat, big coat.
Yeah. So you could reach the pedals.
Yeah, it was. But yeah, Tom, I wanted to thank you for letting me drive your XJS. Honestly, it was a real pleasure and a real privilege. Genuinely. Fantastic car. Probably one of the most fun I've had in a car on a race circuit.
Did you see? You initially turned around to me and said, oh, well, I always say that, you know, when someone lets me drive their car, that it was amazing and all the rest of it. But then you turned around to me in a rather sarcastic manner and said, actually, Tom, your car was rather good. And I was like,
do I trust
him?
I think it's the third time I'm saying it now, so I think you can trust me that I really would enjoy it.
Good.
The noise is very, very good.
Oh, I just, you know, I do genuinely have a very, very, you know, strong bond with that car.
Yeah.
You know, I do love that.
And if you don't know the car we're talking about, if you have a look at last week's Yeti episode, at the end of that episode, Tom brings out his XJS race car and does a few laps.
Yeah, it's a good car, that.
It is a good car, the car.
Yeah.
If you ever need a plus one.
I've got James Wall.
I haven't finished my sentence. You've got James Wall. I was hoping you'd say, yeah, why not? Yeah, okay. But it didn't happen.
You haven't got a race license, have you?
Don't need one. You've seen me on track. I used to. I could come out of retirement, Tom.
You could come out of retirement.
Yeah. Also,
there you go.
This Yeti series in general just wouldn't have been possible without Tom, because you're forgetting about the whole Project 8 as well that he lent us.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
You're really digging into my garage at the moment.
Tom, have you got anything that's really far?
No, not really.
No, but Project 8, fantastic.
So there you go then. Here you go. You need, you go and take your ARDS test.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
are we going to shake? Are we about to shake on something?
Yeah. If you take your ARDS test.
Yeah.
Yeah. And pass.
Yeah.
I will do a two-driver race with you.
Really?
In the Modern Classics at the CSCC.
I want to do Spa 24 hours or nothing.
Well, actually, no, we go to Spa.
Okay. I don't want to do 24 hours at Spa.
You don't want
to die.
No. Yeah.
So, all right, let's shake on it.
Yeah. So you take your ARDS test.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what is the ARDS test for people who don't know?
An ARDS test is a driving license for race.
Because when you get it, you're well ARD. Yeah.
Yeah,
no.
Done. We'll get you past. I know a man, don't worry.
Yeah, basically, if you want to do any competitive track driving, you have to do your ARDS test, which is a written exam, a very basic written exam. Basically, the examiner goes around the room and says, are you sure that's the correct flag? And you're like, no, I'm not. He's like, okay, maybe have another look at that. Yeah.
Have a little think.
Yeah. You can't fail it, but what you can fail is just driving around track. If you're completely incompetent, they won't let you have a
You won't fail the track bit.
No.
You know, you'll be all
right. I've done it before.
Yeah, unless you get overconfident and crash, obviously.
So he could fail the track bit then?
He could, yeah. Because you know.
Genuinely,
I know what I'm doing.
The best thing to do when you're doing your ARDS test, and I learned this, not the hard way, but I learned this, is when you're doing the track driving stuff, there is no minimum speed limit.
No.
So you can pootle around at 30 miles an hour, just don't crash into anything, take the racing line, but you can do it at like 50%. speed that you would, and you're guaranteed to pass.
Yeah.
Just don't get cocky.
I don't know anyone that's failed it, to be perfectly honest.
Challenge accepted.
I think I could fail it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Maybe we should both do our odds.
But me and my Jaguar XJ.
Yeah. God, that was funny. That was a good tracking car. Anyway, Tom, what have you been up to?
Just life in general, really. Yeah. You know, I mean, I haven't sat down and done a podcasty thing for you for a long time. So,
no.
Yeah, but in more recent times, yeah, we're just work's very, very busy, and I've been spending most of my time building my my latest car, which is my E-Type.
Yeah,
which I've owned for about 5 or 6 years, and I'm just it's in my garage at home, and I've been spending a lot of evenings and weekends getting that ready because me and Megs are taking that to Switzerland in end of June, beginning of July, so we want a road trip.
Isn't there something before then that you're building the car for?
Oh, yeah, we're going to take it to, we're definitely going to take it to Shedfest.
Well, hey,
yeah.
Nice. So, Shedfest, 25th of May, get your tickets now.
Yep, and we're going to bring down hopefully some very interesting cars. I've definitely had a couple of things confirmed.
Yeah, okay. Should we reveal? Tom, yeah.
Do you want to talk about that now?
Yeah. So Tom is in charge at Shedfest of the Goodwood Legend section, where you've got like 15, 20 cars. Yeah. That is Tom Lenthal's section of nice shit.
Yeah.
And so, you've got some real nice shit confirmed, haven't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah. So I just thought I'd ring around some of my mates and bring some really just some interesting cars down there, what I consider interesting. And we called it the Legends of Goodwood.
Yep.
This is between me and my mate James have come up with this idea. And we've approached some people. So I've definitely had confirmation from my good mate Grant Williams, who's got probably the most famous racing Jaguar saloon ever, which is Buy One, which is the one you always see at Goodwood Festival of Speed.
Yeah, if you ever see a Jaguar going sideways at Goodwood, it's that
it's
man
driving. It's only my mate Grant. Yeah. So Grant's going to bring Buy One down, and we've had a very good chat with the Jaguar Daimler Heritage Trust, who have got some amazing cars.
Yeah.
I'm sort of like 90% sure they're going to be bringing a couple of bits and pieces down, and I'm waiting for total confirmation because they have to put it to the trust because there's a committee that they have to go through. But I've got a fairly good idea that there's going to be some very, very loud V12s coming down.
Really? Can you give us a little hint of what you've asked for?
I've asked for the XJR9, okay, which is the Silk Cut Le Mans winning car. And I've also asked for the Tom Wilkinshaw touring car XJS, which is I love it. Yeah. Anyway, so it's obviously all things that I love.
I've
got a few other things up my sleeve, and it's not just going to be Jaguars. I've got some Ferraris. I've definitely got an AC Cobra, and I've definitely got some Mercedes, you know, but all old school proper stuff. So we'll wait and see what we can come up with. But, you know, I'm going to have a nice selection of vehicles there for, you know, the sort of stuff that probably wouldn't necessarily ordinarily be at one of your sort of gigs.
Okay. Yeah.
And, you know, just put something different out there. So, yeah, very much looking forward to that. Yeah.
Fantastic.
So that's been keeping me busy sorting all that out as well.
Yeah. And we're going to have internal conversations as well about where the Yeti needs to go. I know you're very keen to have it in the Goodwood Legend section.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a lot of deliberations going on at the moment because lots of people want that, you know.
I was just, the only thing I was worried about, if the sun comes out and I've got the Yeti, it's going to blind me.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, that fluorescent orange on the bonnet. Yeah. With its beauty.
Don't worry, by then it will have rained so much all the paint would have fallen off.
That's true.
Yeah. I did a good job on that though, didn't I?
I did. Watch the video. I love the fact that you haven't even bothered to key up the paint.
No.
It's
too expensive, Tom.
Why? Couldn't you run out of sandpaper? Yeah, that was...
Well, it didn't run out. I just didn't buy it.
But looking at it now, Tom, did it need it?
No.
But there we go.
There you go.
Maybe... painters have been doing it wrong this whole time.
That's what it is.
Just paint over the colour already. It's fine.
I don't know why I'm paying £15,000-£20,000 to paint a classic car. I just need to come and see.
We'll do it.
£120, I'll do it.
Yeah.
But all the panels will be a different colour and there will be overspray on every single colour, including the windscreen.
Excellent.
And the wheels.
And
tyres.
And tyres, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, well, I need to pick the right project, clearly.
Project A.
No, definitely not. No.
Right, Tom, most people know you for two things. The man who used to fix Land Rovers, because you're a businessman now. Mm-hmm. And also the man who joins us for YouTube, J-Pree, from time to time. But you're also a family man, a racing driver, motorbike rider. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more to you than meets the eye. So if it's all right with you, Tom, I'd like to wind the clock back a few decades and hear about Tom Lenthal's formative years.
Really?
So where you grew up, what you did in your youth, and the path that led you to where you are today. So let's wind it back a little bit. Tom, what did young Tom used to do? Were you a bit of a cheeky chappy getting in trouble?
Yeah, I was. Yeah. Okay. Young Tom was, I've always been a little bit sort of, I suppose cheeky is probably the right way of putting it. But when I was a kid, I was, my parents were landlords and I was brought up in pubs and hotels and stuff like that. So,
In the Reading kind of area?
So there you go. I was born in Southampton. Mm-hmm. And my parents had a pub called the Gatties there at the time. And then we went to Richmond, Southampton, Hartley Whitney, which mm-hmm. is where I was brought up. And then we moved away from Hartley Whitney. Oh, no, it was Oxford before that. Sorry. Then we went to Oxford.
So were you these classic live-in landlords at a pub, yeah. like lived above the pub? And
so my dad worked for a company called Schooner Inns, which then became Burnie's, which was basically a steakhouse.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Cool. He started out, actually worked in London. He trained at the Savoy in London and then ended up managing steakhouses, right? So you get sent around all over the place. So we literally, by the time I was 9 years old, we'd moved like 8 times. It was ridiculous.
Wow. Bloody
yeah. hell. So my parents turned around and said, right, we are going to rent a pub. So back in those days, I don't know if it's still the same now, probably is, you'd rent the pub off of the brewery, mm-hmm. right? So it's a tenancy.
Yeah. yeah.
So they took on a tenancy in a pub in Hartley Whitney, which is called the Lamb in Hartley Whitney, or it's not there anymore. But so we moved there and I, from the age of about 10 to 18, we lived there.
Yeah.
And so that's where I always consider myself brought up. But the problem was that by that time I'd moved schools so much mm-hmm. and I'd missed so much education and I'm also quite badly dyslexic, you know, by the time I was done. Mm. I was in trouble.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it, during those years of growing up, you know, I had a lot of good friends, but I had quite a tough time because I was overweight as a kid because I lived in a pub and I ate too much. You know, I was a little fat. Yeah, I was a little bit overweight. and at school I was always in all the bottom groups and that, so I took a bit of stick.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't, you know, I wasn't sort of, you know, sort of like one of the popular kids, as it were. You know, I was the one that was rubbish at sport, mm-hmm. rubbish academically. The only thing I excelled in and did any good in was like electronics and metal work. And
did they have electronics back then?
No, he means abacuses.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So I did take a lot of stick.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't, you know, I did, you know, take a, you know.
So when you say you took a lot of stick, do you mm-hmm. mean you were bullied?
Yeah.
You were bullied.
Yeah. I was a butt of the joke all the time and all that kind of stuff, you know. So, which, on reflection now, when I think back to it, it does actually make you, you know, I wouldn't recommend it, but what it did do for me personally, it made me, when I finally found the thing that I was good at and I loved, by the time I was like 13, 14, I was taking motorbikes apart. I think I got my first motorbike when I was 11 years old.
So you've always been quite mechanically minded then?
Yeah. I'd go upstairs and I'd nick my dad's toolbox and we had a little garage at the Lamb and I would, you know, I think by the time I was 15 or 16, I had like 8 motorbikes in the shed.
Really?
Yeah, I was, you know, I was taking them apart and I was painting them. And
Were you riding these?
Oh, yeah. Tom can't disclose this information. Yeah.
No, this was 100 years ago. It's fine.
No, we were lucky. We had a forestry commission and a common up the road. And we were just, I mean, you know, I'd work in the pub. My dad would make us, not make us, he would, you know, we'd have to work in the pub for pocket money.
Yeah.
And I spent all of my pocket money on spares for the motorbike and fuel.
Amazing.
And then every weekend I was across the woods with my mates, Paul and Jim. And it was great. I loved it.
Amazing.
Yeah, so the only thing my mum bought for me was a crash helmet.
Good. Yeah.
She wasn't fair keen play, on me motorbikes. And well, at the time when I was 15, I thought, right, okay, I need a 50cc motorbike. So I bought what you call an FS1E, a fizzy, and mm-hmm. I had a scooter as well. And I remember my mum, I walk into the pub and my mum goes, if another local comes in here and tells me they've seen you riding that motorbike down the road. And I got my knuckles wrapped by the police a few times, a local copper, you know, and all that sort of thing. But
why is that?
Just for riding on the road.
Okay.
Yeah, and when you shouldn't be.
Yeah.
You know, on a motocross bike with no insurance and no MOT. No,
nothing's changed, has it? No. There's still people doing that today.
So, yeah, so all of that mechanical stuff and that was, you know, was sort of like, that's all started from a really early age. But mm-hmm. it's my parents and my brother and my sister not into cars at all, or motorbikes. Okay. Not
interesting. So you were all self-taught then from all of that stuff?
Or? Yeah. I was self-taught up until the age of 16. And then I went to college and did a college course in motor vehicle repairs. And then you did a year's full time of City and Guilds, years full time. And then you had to go out and do work experience. And then hopefully the places you did work experience would offer you a job and you finish off your apprenticeship. That was how it was, right? So I went to, I've told you this before, I went to a BMW garage,
Hampshire cars.
And I was, so this would have been 1989. So that would have been what, E30s, I suppose.
Yeah, right? E30s.
Yeah. So I was working, I always remember that because it was the one garage I worked in. And the guys...
There was no work coming in because the cars were so reliable. So you had to switch to another.
I'll tell you the interesting thing about that was you had a separate room where you had to go into to buy the stereo for your car. So brand new BMWs didn't come with a radio.
What? Okay.
Yeah, honestly, there was a side shop, which is an audio shop, and you'd go in there and you'd find and pick your radio.
Fantastic.
And then the guys would install them in the workshop. But the thing that really made me laugh at that was... It's unbelievable now. We used to smoke in the workshop.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, when I was still working at Autocar. Well, no, this was slightly after. Yeah, but like,
we're talking with brake cleaner and petrol and everything.
Yeah, but you smoked everywhere. I remember being a kid and people smoking next to me in a restaurant.
I mean, planes.
Yeah.
Smoking on planes. Yeah. That's mad.
My parents both smoked, and when we were kids, we used to have to go to the back of the plane and get fogged out.
Really?
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
Yeah. But anyway. So I did BMW, I did Ford, and I went back to my college lecturer and I said, oh, do you know what? I'm just, you know, it's a bit boring. I want to do a little bit more. And he said, I know this bloke that restores old Jags. Mm-hmm. We'll stick you down with him for a couple of weeks here. Get on. So I went down and this chap called Brian Stevens, who's still a really good mate of mine. And I did work experience with him. And then I then got a job as a Saturday boy. And unfortunately, it was at a period in time when there's a bit of recession going on. And he said, look, I can't give you a full-time job. So I was like, that's no good. So I was around one of my friend's house and I'd picked up a little bit of knowledge on old cars by this point. And I said, oh, there's a body shell in this garage. I said, that's a Mark II body shell. And he went, yeah, that belongs to my uncle. All right. Okay. He goes, yeah, he runs a restoration firm. I was like, really? Okay. Ooh. All right, fine. So I went off and spoke to my friend's mum, Blanche. And Blanche said to me, I'll have a word with Roland and I'll get you some work experience, no problem. So I thought, brilliant. Yeah. It was only 10 miles down the road. I should ride my motorbike there and did a couple of weeks work experience. And then I asked him for a job and I got the same response. And I was like, oh God, you know, no one's hiring at the moment in this restoration business because there's not a lot of money about. Mm. So I went to, I went back to Blanche, or I was round at my mate John's house and I said to Blanche, oh no, he said, you know, unfortunately, he's not hiring at the moment. And Blanche just looked at me and she goes, don't worry, leave it to me. As in Blanche's true fun. And then literally 2 days later, I got a phone call saying I got a job.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So, and then I stayed there for 8 years.
And what were you doing there?
I was a mechanic. So I learned, we were taking cars and we were stripping them down to bare shells, rebuilding everything and putting them back. The only thing we used to farm out back at Roland's place was... trim work, really, and maybe the odd gearbox and diff, but all the engines and axles and did the welding. You know, we were literally, you know, we had a paint oven. We did everything.
Yeah, you learned your craft.
So you learned how to build cars.
Yeah.
And we also did race cars as well. So I learned how to build race cars. So I learned a lot of the racing stuff there as well.
And at this point, you're what, mid-20s?
When I left Roland's, I started there when I was 16.
Okay, a bit younger then, yeah.
Yeah, I was 16 when I started there, so I would have been...
23 or so.
Yeah, 23 I think I was, yeah. I took a 9 month sabbatical and when I got qualified and I went and lived in Australia for a bit because that was kind of what everyone was doing at the time, so went and got drunk for 9 months.
How was Australia?
Yeah, it was all right.
And what did you do over there? Were you doing bar work and the usual?
No, I actually got a job in a garage in the end. I tried a couple other things. But
what couple things?
I tried.
It's got a big smile on his face. Yeah, there's a story here.
Stripper.
I got a job as a door to door salesman.
What? Did you?
Yeah.
What were you selling?
Can you imagine 23 year old Tom in Australia?
No.
I was 20. I had my 21st birthday in Australia, right?
Oh, wow.
So I was going door to door selling promotional vouchers for businesses. So, like, you know, you buy this promo sheet and you get your next 10 pizzas at half price.
Okay,
and,
yeah,
or
yeah,
next
yeah.
five cinema tickets. It was that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But what really used to happen was we were rubbish.
Yeah.
We were, I wasn't very good at selling like that. And we just end up at the end of the day just getting really drunk.
Nice.
And,
yeah. Using know, the promotional vouchers that yeah, you were yeah. selling.
Yeah.
Again, nothing has changed.
No. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so this would have been, this was 1994 and I'm in Sydney and there was a visit from Prince Charles.
Yeah. Okay.
Prince Charles had come over to Australia and he was in, and I remember on a Sunday morning, I'm absolutely wasted. And I've got out of, I was skipping around at my mate's house, whatever, and I'm walking down the road thinking I'm going back.
Yeah.
And this motorcade comes past and it's clearly Prince Charles. And it's just me stood there on the side of the street. Yeah.
Oh, what a sorry sight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. With my Union Jack shorts on. Hanging.
Can you imagine the conversation in the car?
Yeah, yeah.
That's one of ours.
So, but yeah, anyway, so anyway, we did restoration for a bit and then I went off and I wanted to learn something different. So I managed to get, I saw an advert, one of my mates saw an advert in the paper at the main dealer in Guildford and I got the job.
Okay.
So I went and learned about modern cars.
Yeah.
And I did that for from 1996 to end of 2007.
Okay.
And, you know, I did really quite well at that. You know, I was quite good at all the electrics and sussing stuff out and that. So became a master tech and
Tom, you, for people who are listening and young people,
yeah,
what is the best way to get into, like, if you want to get into being a mechanic now, like, do you still think that you people should find like a classic car restoration, or do they even exist still, like, that many of them?
Yeah, or, you know, it's great due to like bumping into you lot, I get sent more CVs than ever, right? And there's a definite skills, a lack of skill set in my trade these days. Yeah. And a lot of people have stayed away from it because really, to be perfectly honest, the wages aren't that great, right? But it's changed now. It has changed. It used to be everyone wants to go to IT because I can sit in a nice office. But
yeah,
if you are mechanically minded,
versus academically, more mechanically than academically.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And you know, and you've got a passion, you know, passion for cars. So I always turn around and say, I can teach anyone to fix a car. I can't teach them to be passionate about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got to kind of have a love for it, you know, it certainly to be in my workshop, but yeah, but there's college courses you can do. You will not have a problem, I would say, in today's world, finding an apprenticeship because we haven't got enough good kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the thing. So I always have an apprentice. You guys have been to the workshop.
Yep,
there's always,
yeah, yeah.
You know, because if we don't pass on the skills that I've learned and the other guys in the workshop have learned, then we're done for, aren't we? Yeah. So you can get hold of the technical colleges.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's all this stuff now where you kids have to stay in education till they're 18. And they, most of them are going off and doing A-levels or whatever.
Yep.
Or alternatively, you can do an apprenticeship. So the apprentices that we take on, they're 16 years old. So they're not having to go off and do A-levels. You know, what is the point in someone who's practically skilled, yeah, and not necessarily academic, going off and doing a maths and an English, you know, A-level?
Quite
pointless,
right.
It's pointless. I don't understand why we're pushing kids to do stuff where that's not their skill set, you know.
Yep.
So,
and
anyway,
what they're not passionate about either. Yeah,
yeah, they're not passionate about. Yeah, so all of the kids that come to me, when I sit down and I talk to them, I'm not really, you know, I'm looking for at the glimmer of light,
yeah,
that says to me, I want to teach you how to do this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you've got to want to do it. But now also the wages are getting a lot better. You know, I know people that work in the IT trade and, you know, like generally, you know, if you're working in a, you know, I don't know, a blooming call center or whatever, you know, and you're answering, you know, how to, you know, download this or whatever it is, I guarantee you that the business that we're in will pay better money than that nowadays.
Okay.
So, yeah, so it's not the dead duck that it used to be.
Okay.
And it was a dead duck for a while. I have to confess. Yeah. It wasn't
is that good. Just because what the hourly, has the hourly rate but an average mechanic, has that just gone up a lot higher?
Yeah, it has. Yeah, and it's put us in a situation where we can pay more. And, you know, it's really underrated as well. It really frustrates me that if you're a really good carpenter, yeah, you know, it's, you know, the tools that you use have got better and the theory hasn't changed for forever, has it really? You know, but for us as mechanics, our product changes every year. the technology. So not only do I need to know about braking systems and tires and exhausts and God knows what else and engines and now batteries, although that's a bit, you know, I think that's a blip, but anyway, there you go. you know, but we've also got to be electrical engineers and software engineers.
Yeah.
You know, look, there's, you know, you're driving around in a vehicle now. So, you know, like your XJ, as an example, has got, I don't know, 50 or 60 control modules in it, which are all networked together. And you've got, I think it's four networks in your car. You'll have CAN, MOS, LIN. I don't know, it's got SCP in that one, but anyway, it doesn't matter. But, you know, there's a lot technically going on, you know, so your skill set that you need to be able to fix a car in its entirety is actually quite broad.
Yes,
very. You know, it's not like it used to be. It's not like, oh, I'm a spanner man and I change your brakes and I do your points and, you know. Yeah. But yeah, so there's a lot to it. So yeah, I really encourage people to learn it because, like I say, I can teach you how to do it.
Yeah.
But I can't teach you to want to do it.
Okay. Before we continue, a quick show of love to this week's podcast sponsor, which is our very, very good friends, Febby Bilstein, with whom we are now officially partnered for 2025 to support our projects this year. And I'm sure you already know the Febby name already because their OE matching quality parts have helped keep countless cars on the channel alive, including Big Pete.
Your Alpha.
My Alpha, the 156 yep. GTA. Roger, that's up there. Also, our super high mileage KN, 250,000 mile KN. And Sharon.
Yeah, I think Febby gave most of their catalogue for that car.
Yes, yeah, there is a reason that car is still going, and that's because of Febby. So we use Febby parts on a weekly basis and have installed their brakes, suspension components, have used their engine and gearbox service kits extensively, and I mean extensively. And I even have Febby's timing chain kit on my old BMW 530D, which brought that car back from the brink of death. So I'm super, super happy about that. You name it, we've done it, and we have always been super, super happy with Febby's quality. And what I love most about Febby is that they literally have everything for every car at a fraction of dealer prices, and their parts are widely available wherever you get your parts from. Febby also has a sister company called Blueprint that specializes in Asian cars, and just like with Febby, you get a 3-year warranty with everything that you buy. So do as we do and get your car parts from either Febby or Blueprint and make use of their simple online parts finder, which you know a bit more about, don't you?
Yeah, you can just put any make model of your car in there and it'll tell you all the list of parts that Febby do for your car. It's surprising the amount they actually do for each vehicle.
Oh yeah, trust us, you will not be disappointed. The link for that is below. So again, to Febby, thanks for supporting us. We genuinely love you guys. Back to the podcast. Well, let's rewind it back to 2007. You're a master tech at yep. Jaguar. Mm-hmm. And then what is the next step in Tom Lenthal's life?
The next step is Tom Lenthal is married. He's got two kids, a missus that has decided that she wants to be a stay-at-home mum, which I'm really glad that we've done that. Mm. And in a financial situation where every month when he gets his wages, he's about 500 or 600 quid a month behind.
Ah, okay.
Every month.
Really?
Yeah, and thinking, well,
got to do something about this.
Need to do something about this, you know. And, you know, at the time, the money in the trade wasn't that great. So what do I do? So I thought, oh, well, do you know what? I'm just going to give it a go. I'm going to go out on my own. And what's the worst thing that's going to happen? I'll have a little bit more debt than I'm cruising towards at the moment.
Yep.
And, you know, if all goes well, hopefully I'll be on the right side of it.
Okay.
It's the best thing I've ever done for me personally.
And before we get onto that, what was Meg's opinion? Was she supportive? Was she nervous?
No, Meg was very supportive, actually. No, she was, you know, and she's, you know, when I say I started the business, me and Meg started the business, because I can't emphasize enough, and you guys have seen it.
Oh, God, yeah. You'd be lost without Meg.
Oh, no, she is, she is.
He'd forget how to breathe.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, so Meg is as instrumental in the running of the business as much as I am,
100%.
So she was very supportive, and we, you know, it was a joint decision. It was like, you know, either you go back to work and we pay someone else to bring up our kids, you know, and pay for childcare and all this sort of stuff, or we give this a go. So, you know, so we were both invested in it.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. So Tom Lenthal Limited becomes a thing in 2007?
It was, yeah, more like 2008, really, when I formed the company and all the rest of it, because I took a little bit of time out, you know. How am I going to do this? And it takes a while to build things up. But yeah, by 2008, I think we'd formed the company was formed. Yeah, yep. we were trading properly. Yeah.
And what was that first year? What did that look like for you?
That first year was just really busy, and I was lucky that I was able to fill the garage up. I was working from home. I had a big garage at home, which I've still got, and it was all right. It was just me by myself.
Yep.
And then Reese, who you guys know, yeah, was helping me on the weekends and evenings because he was working as a mechanic for my old boss Roland, and then by the time we got into 2009, we were so busy, Reese came to work for me full time.
Amazing.
So that this was still in your garage as well?
Yeah, at home, yeah.
And that took less than 2 years for you to be overwhelmed with work?
Yeah, I was overwhelmed. Amazing. Yeah. So, and then we managed to find a little workshop a couple of miles up the road, and I had this theory in my head that if you are going to run your own business, yeah, and you're going to be self-employed and you're working by yourself, what happens if I break my arm or my leg? I'm done, aren't I? Mm. Yeah. So I came up to the conclusion that I needed to not spend any money and save as much money as I could until I had 6 months worth of wages sat in the bank. And, you know, whatever could happen to me, if it was beyond 6 months, I'd probably be done anyway. Do you know
what I mean? So he's not coming back from that.
Yeah. I'm not, whatever you've done, you've done too much. I thought was a good sort of business strategy in my head. So I got 6 months wages in the bank, and then this workshop came up, and I was like, oh God, it's a lot of money to spend. And at the time I had 25 grand is what I had.
Yeah.
And so I went and saw the bloke and I put the deposit down and I did it, kitted it all out. And this was at the in the winter 2009, so it had been December time, and we got it all set up. So literally January 2010, we're trading.
Yep. Yeah,
and then it snowed for 4 weeks, and no one could get to the workshop.
Oh shit!
And I had no money in the bank. I'd spent everything.
So what cars were you working on at the time?
I was going to say,
because we're talking Land Rovers here, right? Yeah.
When was the most genius decision that you ever made, Tom? And that was to put those words underneath your logo, which is Jaguar Land Rover Specialist.
Okay, so when we went to...
Straight after it snowed.
Yeah, because it's the only thing we could fix. No, we went to... when we were at Langley Common Road, we didn't have the head height. So we knew that... it went JLR in 2005, right? So in 2005... the technology of, I needed one set of software to fix a Jaguar, to fix a Land Rover. That happened in 2005, right? So by the time we got to 2010, we were like, actually, we've got the workshop now. We can do, I'd already been fixing Land Rovers anyway. We did it with work and, with the main dealer and stuff. So it wasn't like it was an alien thing to us. But we didn't really start doing that until... when we went to the second workshop on the farm, which was 2015.
Okay.
So you were on a farm in 2000.
Yeah. So in 2010, we opened up at Langley Common Road. Yeah. We did 5 years there and we were doing a few Land Rovers. We had body off jobs in there and stuff like that. So we were able to do it. There was one ramp we could use to do it, but it wasn't like a big thing. It was predominantly Jaguars. And we were doing an awful lot of tuning work at the time.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
I was doing, big supercharger conversions and, trying to be clever and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we took on the big workshop at the farm, Hogwood Farm, in 2015. And we went from a workshop that was, 2,000 square foot to 6,500 square foot.
Wow.
It was a big jump.
Yeah.
And we thought, we need to fill it up. Mm. So we really pushed hard on the Land Rovers at the time. And now we probably do more Land Rovers than we do Jaguars.
Oh, that's weird.
Well, we don't make Jaguars anymore, Rory, so not really.
Well, no. It's just weird because they break down all the time, Tom. It was,
Well,
that was the most genius move you've ever made.
That was just by chance. That was never a plan,
A garage that works on JLR will never not be busy.
Yeah.
But there's two reasons for that, I think. Mainly because...
Is one of the reasons the Ingenium?
No, forget the Ingenium. I hate that. I don't understand how a company can do something so bad. I don't know, it's not just Jaguar, Land Rover, BMW have had problems with their smaller diesel engines. It's just why? It's an industry thing and it just drives me mad. But I think the two main, the key thing is with the cars are the biggest thing is the people love them.
Yeah.
And when the product's working, it's just, you know, you always miss it.
Yeah.
You know, it's very rare for me to sell a Jag or a Range Rover or a Land Rover that I've owned and not have some sort of seller's remorse afterwards.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You know, it's only the fact that you're there moving on to another one that, yeah. You know, so.
I mean, you struggled to sell me that XJ Ferrari, didn't you?
Yeah, it's a great car. I tried buying it back off him a couple of days ago. So I think it's the product is brilliant.
Mm. Oh, yeah, okay, so the L322, for example,
yeah.
There should not be the amount that there are on the road. Like
financially,
there should not be that many.
They're
on
old
the
cars as
yeah,
well.
They're old cars. They cost a lot to run and maintain.
Yep.
There should not be this many on the road.
No, you're right. Yeah, but what? So the reason there is them is because people like them.
Yeah, yeah. They love them. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
They're family members, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. And I love the owners.
I bet you do. And so do your kids who've gone to university.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Sometimes when you're handing over a bill, Tom, does that love of their car sort of fade out of them?
Do you know what? It's really, when I first started, you know, and I'm thinking, oh my God, you know, I was pretty skint at the time, to say the least. You know, I'm thinking, where were they going to find £1,500 to pay this bill? where does someone find that kind of money to service a car and change a set of brake pipes or whatever? You know, it's like, you know, I couldn't, you know, and I'd feel bad about handing the bill over, you know.
And now Tom's hourly rate is £1,500.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, as you get older, you have a better understanding of it. Yeah. And the rest of it, you don't worry. But yeah, I did used to, you know, I remember once I was talking to a guy about his e-time. He goes, Tom, just tell me how much it is, for God's sake. You know, I was like, oh, and I've had to do this and I've had to do this. Just, he goes, I know you've done all that. Just tell me how much it is. So you kind of, you get used to that after a while. Yeah.
So business is good now. How many people do you employ?
There's 12 of us, including me.
Okay. So, yeah, and what does the future of Tom Lenthal look like?
Well, I don't really, you know, it's ever changing. So
are you personally going to slow down?
That's a good question, isn't it?
Oh,
I doubt it. Mm. It's not in me.
You're a grafter, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, again, I think that was an influence from my parents, because I was brought up in an environment where you work 7 days a week, 365 days a year. I mean, we were open on Christmas Day.
Mm.
So I was brought up with that.
Yeah.
You know, you started early in the morning, you finished late at night. So it was just, you know, and I've never really known any different. So we did do something this year where we've always worked Saturdays. And this year I finally turned around and I said, we're not going to open on Saturdays anymore because I want my weekends.
Nice. Oh, that's it. Close the business down. It's done.
Yeah. He's lost the passion, hasn't he?
Yeah. I've lost it. Yeah. But so, yeah, I am definitely going to continue doing what I'm doing. We're definitely going to continue fixing and maintaining and repairing modern cars.
Yeah.
And we're definitely going to continue doing the classic stuff, because that's where my passion is the old cars and messing around with them.
Yeah.
So
and enjoying the fruits of your labor as well. You've got the project date, which is fantastic. You've got your race car, you do racing, you do motorbikes as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, if you've worked hard, you know, like, so I actually think part of the reason why I actually get on with you guys is, you know, despite people probably don't realise it, you two work incredibly hard.
No, Rory's dad pays for everything.
Oh, no, that's true. Yeah. That is true. Yeah.
That's not actually true. Rory's dad has nothing to do with the business.
Yeah. Never has.
Yeah. I don't, you know, people don't realise the hours that you guys put in to do what you do and the weekends that you give up to do it. You know, it's not a 9-to-5 job that you're doing.
It's not, no. No,
and it's not a 9-to-5 job that I do. And, you know, so... Yeah, so but the thing is, the reason you do it and you put the hours in is because you enjoy it.
Yeah, love it. This is literally our lives, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah.
Completely.
It's weekends, weekdays, evenings. Yeah. It's all the
Tom,
time.
Tom Lenthal Limited as a business is my life.
Yeah.
As a, you know, and I was, even before the business started, I was always just working, you know, if there was an opportunity to go out and fix another car and earn a couple of quid, I'd do it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just the way I am. So am I going to stop? Probably not. You know, I've sort of said to myself, I want to get to a certain stage where I've got the choice to stop if I want.
What does a choice look like?
Oh,
is it
a financial? It's just a financial choice, which I'm hoping to hit by the time I'm 60, I will have the choice of whether I want to work or not.
And you're 50 now?
I'm 51.
51.
Oh. Yeah, so I think that, but I think even by the time I get to 60 that I'll still... keep.
Yeah, he'll just double that financial figure, won't he?
Yeah. And, you know,
he'll go to 200 million, won't it? Yeah.
But I am quite lucky that I've worked hard enough to be put myself in a situation where, you know, like, the other day you ring me up and say, oh, do you fancy coming up with a project? And, you know, I've said to the boys, right, I'm not going to be here today. I'm going to go and do this. And, you know. Promotion. It's promotional work.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, I mean, without YouTube, the business amount of times would be nowhere. Yeah.
Where Tom's just like, oh, I've just been invited down to Goodwood House to by Lord so-and-so because he's going to go help need some help with his Jaguar.
We're going horse racing, aren't we?
Yeah.
I'm actually supposed to be at the Cheltenham Gold Cup.
Yeah.
Oh, you're proper posho, aren't you?
One of our customers, his horse is running.
Yeah.
So,
do you reckon all the posh people just like to have Tom round because he's a little bit rough?
No, it's just so they keep him grounded. Fix his car when they break down on the way there.
Technical support. Anyway, but it's a JLR pod. It's going to break down. So
Oh, fantastic! Well, I'm really glad that we got a bit of insight into your life, Tom.
Yeah. I've done a few things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You're very thick-skinned as well, aren't you? And you're a grafter.
Yeah, because I think that goes back to when I said when I was younger, I used to get take a lot of shit, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it takes an awful lot to ruffle my feathers in that manner.
Trust us, we've tried. Yeah. We really have tried. You know, I tried in the XJS. He just looked cool and calm. Oh, no, he didn't.
I do think on your birthday weekend, we did manage to ruffle him slightly there.
Oh, yeah. What did we do? I can't remember.
That was a certain picture was taken in Alex's car.
Oh.
And then Alex retaliated.
Can we talk about that?
Yeah. See, now, when you said to me earlier, right, oh, Tom, your hair's sticking up, I thought, do you think I'm worried about my hair sticking up? Do you not remember that photo that we done in this very room?
Okay, a bit of context, right? In January, I turned 40 years.
Right, and if you put that photo out, I will have a sense of humour failure.
Will you? Yes. Will I ruffle your feathers?
Yes.
Can we flash it up for one frame?
No.
Okay,
no,
we won't put it in. Will we, Rory?
No, just blurred.
So, yeah, basically, I turned 40 in January. We all went to Cornwall and had a really good weekend. And Tom's present to me was a cup. I like cups. I like drinking tea. Mm-hmm. On that cup is a picture of this middle-aged man stark bollock naked in my dream car, in my Porsche 993 911. And I looked at that and I was like, that's a really good Photoshop. He was like, it ain't a fucking Photoshop. And I had to look at it for about 10 minutes. I'm like, actually, that is a background in the unit. And you are stark bollock naked with your balls and your ass on my white leather.
Yeah.
And you're smiling at me.
It's brown leather now, mate. It's
just a streak of brown.
To be fair, I think he still might be the last person that sat in that car, actually.
Yeah. Well, I gave it a bit of a sniff. I was like, I'll give it two more months. Yeah. So, I have that. In my kitchen at home, I actually made myself a cup of tea. I think 2 days ago, I was like, this bloody cup.
And
it just tastes so sweet.
Alex retaliated on the weekend, but with genius levels of retaliation.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, this is with my car.
Yeah. So you drove down in your lovely Range Rover, didn't you, with Meg?
I did take my Range Rover, yeah.
And I can't remember how we kind of set it up. Oh, yeah. No, you could tell that, this was...
So I left my keys somewhere like a fool, didn't I?
So Tom was laughing about this with the mug. And then he was, I think at the time as well, when he handed it over, he said he's not dumb enough to leave his keys somewhere. And I happened on the evening to be walking past the kitchen counter that we were staying in. And whose keys were on the table? Mr. Tom Lenthal's.
Yeah. So those keys went missing for an entire evening.
They did. Yes.
And then the next morning, on the Sunday morning, when you were cooking your bacon and eggs, I just moseyed on into the cottage, and I handed you your keys. And you're like, what's going on? Where were they? I was like, oh, nothing, Tom. And then we had a little conversation, didn't we? And you were like, what the have you done to my car? And I was nothing, Tom. And I literally just walked out.
Yeah. You gave me nothing, but left me with everything.
And for the whole day,
I was searching my car.
You were
looking for right. There's
clues.
Dog shit in here, or an old kipper. Or
for the whole day, Tom was just like, look at me, like deadpan, and I'd look at him and then just walk away from him. He's like, "What have you done? Just tell me what you've done."
Drove me mad, didn't it?
Yeah. Occasionally, me and Gareth and Alex would just be going, "Gosh, amazing! What four naked people in the car look like?"
But the best part was, all I'd done was just taken the keys and just handed them to Tom.
Yeah.
I didn't even know where the car was, Tom.
It was enough.
It was enough.
It was enough.
Or was it?
Well, yeah, I don't know.
We can now reveal.
We're
going to
reveal.
It was like Rory going to me, "I can't believe you're that dumb to leave your keys." But I did.
Yeah, yes, you did. Yeah, that was a very good weekend. Anyway, it's time to now move on the podcast to Find of the Week. Do we have the theme tune?
Find of the week.
Well, are we going to put the theme tune in?
We can put a theme tune
okay,
in.
Okay, the theme tune is...
It's time for Find of the Week.
Wow. That's really not... We have a theme tune. He's just not programmed.
Okay.
So Find of the Week, where you, yes you, the audience, give us a budget and category and we will come armed with our car of choice and argue about whose is best. Now, if you remember last week, our category was convertible cars and our budget was £2,000. Rory, you chose the MGB?
Midget. You cannot get an MGB.
I don't know. They're just all shit and old, aren't they? I chose the Alfa GTV convertible and Taylor went with the TT 3.2 V6. And although Taylor did technically cheat because it was like £2,190.
I've looked.
Yeah.
The podcast email, everyone has agreed that because Taylor cheated, he was out.
Yeah, but everyone said that Taylor's car was the best. It was.
Okay. Why did he cheat?
Because we had a budget of £2,000 and this car was £2,190. Oh, so right, okay. Yeah, which means then that I won.
No.
The GTV won.
There were a few people who shouted out the MG Midget.
Yes,
as well.
A few. But we had about 100 or 200 emails and most of those were either Audi TT. Look at your face. You know it's true.
I do know.
So GTV won. Fantastic. So this week's category and prize has been sent in by Nathan Wilson, who wants us to find a great first road legal track car for a budget of £3,000. You look very excited, Rory. Do you want to get us started? What have you found?
I think I've won this one.
Oh, here we go.
So I've gone for a Mini Cooper S R53 track car.
Are they the ones that blow up, Tom?
They are very boomy, yes.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. But why have you done that?
Because when they work, they are amazing.
Okay.
And this one is an already converted track car. So unlike you guys, I imagine the options that you pick, yes, they may be good for just normal little runs. This is already a track car.
Okay. So for people listening, describe it.
So it is a blue R53 Cooper S.
Yeah.
It's got, as we can see, looks like some alloys on here.
Yeah.
I think do look probably like lightweight alloys with some tires. I can't tell the tires yet. There is some racing damage on it.
Fantastic. Yeah, patina.
But the main point, it's already...
It's got a cage.
It's got a cage.
And
it's been stripped.
Has it got a bucket seat?
And it's got a bucket seat with a racing harness.
A single bucket seat.
And then if I go on in the description.
Yeah.
And this is now where it gets really good.
Yeah.
So it's had a new clutch in January, supercharger service in January, fully stripped interior, JP cage, half cage, bucket seat for the driver, TRS 5-point harness, drilled and grooved discs, pads all the way around. Yellow stuff front pads, Yokohama Nivara tires all round. I don't know. I'm just going to go with that.
It's got tires, yeah.
Aftermarket exhaust, and it's had noise tasks that it's passed on.
Yep.
Front tow strap, 15% supercharger pulley, remapped to 200 horsepower, new radiator, cooling fan wired to a switch.
Is that
which
a
that
lot?
That is a problem on these.
Yeah.
Bonnet springs and coilovers.
Oh, okay.
So what about the larger intercooler to get those air intake temperatures down and stop it from going melty?
What's the price on that?
You can add that because you've got £500 left.
£2,500?
Yeah, £2,500.
That's not too bad.
No, I think this is
that's
an absolute
good value
steal
for money,
for
to
what
be
this
fair.
Is. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. That's a very, very strong choice. And Tom, I've got loaded up on my phone, actually, your car, because I'm the only one who can do a screen recording, apparently. So why don't you talk us through your motor vehicle of choice? What is it, Tom?
Okay, so this is, everyone's going to, it's a Mazda MX-5.
Ooh.
So I actually own a Mazda MX-5 similar to this. So it's the Mark II.
Yeah.
It's the 1800.
Oh.
Okay. And the engine on them, they rev.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah, you get them and things on cam. They're lovely.
All right.
This one has also got track set up on it.
Oh, yeah.
So he's got like the toe straps in
there. So it's a red Mark II with a black bonnet and a black boot.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Race it's got nice wheels on
it.
It's
quite spicy, yeah.
Yeah, it is quite spicy. It hasn't quite got a full stripped out interior and stuff like that. It looks very nice and clean under the bonnet.
He's got a bit of silicone there.
Yeah, he's got a bit of silicone. He's got the air filters. He's got the alloy radiator.
Yeah.
And it's also got the cage in the back, I think, from memory.
Oh, like a rollover. Yeah,
yeah,
like
yeah. It's got a rollover bar in the back.
Well, let's have a little look at the, what's the description say? Seymour. Right, what we got here, Tom?
When you say Seymour.
Tom can't, because he hasn't got his glasses.
Oh, do you want me to read it, Tom?
Yeah, because I haven't got my glasses.
This is a 1999 Mazda MX-5 1800, like you said.
There you go.
Listed 14 hours ago in Cheltenham.
Yeah. Oh, that's not too far from me.
It is not too far. And it's listed for 2,295.
It was at 2,250 quid, wasn't it?
2,295.
All right. Okay.
So, you've got £705.
So, therefore, I believe that this is a far, far better option than the. It's less likely to blow up than the.
Mini,
for starters.
Very true.
I will give you this is the more reliable option.
Yeah, definitely the more reliable option. We know they're really good fun to drive. Yeah. It's got a lot of the track stuff already on it.
Would you want me to read the description, Tom?
Yeah, go on.
All right, selling my Mazda MX-5 1.8. Great little car, which I bought for some fun. Comes with coilovers and loads of other suspension parts underneath. 421 manifold to custom exhaust. Has a cat, which you need to take off. Limited slip differential, cold air intake, alloy uprated radiator, touchscreen stereo. Very important when you're on the racetrack.
Clearly.
Engine brace, half cage, and lots of other bits and bobs on it. Comes with a fresh 12-month MOT too. If you're interested, just drop me a massage. Thanks for viewing. Strong choice,
so,
Tom.
So you've also got a much, much larger budget to spend on doing track days.
I'll give you that. That's, that's a very, very good
shout. And he doesn't need to buy a radiator.
But round the track, which one is winning? The R53 or the MX-5?
Which one are you having more fun in, though?
Okay, that's a good question. So I've not actually driven my Mark II MX-5 around the track, but I have driven, what did you call your MX-5?
Lindsay.
Lindsay.
Yeah.
That's a Mark III.
But I know it's a Mark III, yeah, but I'm also...
Don't get fresh with Tom, all right? Yeah, he knows. He knows.
Well, I knew that.
Well, I'm not sure you can see without your glasses.
So I'm actually taking that to Donington tomorrow. We're doing a...
Oh, exciting.
We're going to Donington tomorrow to test down. We're using it as a...
Bit of a shakedown.
Yeah, a bit of a shakedown.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. For those who don't know, one of Tom's customers actually bought Lindsay.
Yeah.
And they use it as like a track.
It's an
amazing car.
We're using it as a tutor car, basically. Yeah. So my mate Nigel's got that and we're going to go and do some tutoring with him tomorrow.
Fantastic. So. All right. So we've got a Mini that's going to blow up.
No.
We got a Mazda that's very slow. And now I'm going to show you guys what I have bought. Not bought, what I would buy.
Go on then.
Budget is 3,000.
Yep.
I'm spending all of my £3,000 on a 2007 Mazda RX-8. What? Why are you laughing?
Because that's going to blow up as well.
Are you
mental? No, Tom, to be fair, it won't blow up. He'll just do one lap. He'll come into the pits, turn it off, and then he won't be able to start it again.
No, because it says in the advert, starts every time, no, in capital letters, cold/hot start that you would expect from a 44,000 mile car.
Is it only got 44,000?
Yes. Description.
Because no one dared drive them any further.
Let me just go through the description, all right? RX-8 Kuro Coupe driven, it says 42,000 miles, so maybe it's lost a bit of mileage. So it's 184 out of 500 ever made. Wankel rotary, 9,000 RPM redline, 50-50 weight distribution, 234 brake horsepower model, ULEZ exempt as well. Very important for the racetrack. Full service history, starts every time, no cold hot start issues, heated front seats, cream leather seats, blah, blah, blah. LSD, rear wheel drive, bodywork in perfect condition, no rust on arches. The only mod done to the car is a full manifold back 3-inch stainless exhaust with active valve sounds. Amazing.
Whoa. Yeah.
So I think he's got a bit of a fruity exhaust on there, which is very nice. And 42,000 miles. I actually did a check on Car Vertical because this is an old car. It all checks out. However, the one thing that I will say about this is, and let me just, because I did write some notes down here, is so it's only done 2 owners, no damage, mileage checks out, but it's only done 7 miles since 2019.
Do you know why that is?
Because it broke.
It's because they haven't been able to start it.
Shut up. It says no cold or hot start issues. So if you do look at this, obviously it's not done many miles since
2019. Well, I've got to be honest.
Yeah.
How's it got hot? It hasn't been anywhere in the last 5 years. Yeah,
how did he know? It's only done 7 miles.
Yeah.
It's either that.
To be fair, he said no hot or cold start issues. He's not started it, so it's fine.
Do you know what else that screams then?
Yeah, go on.
Mileage blocker.
Not on a 2007 RX-8, man.
It could be.
No.
It's either mileage blocker or it's not working.
No. What, the speedo? The odometer?
Yeah. The simple mileage blocker, just cut the cable.
Well, I think the reality is here that mine's the sensible choice.
But boring. Mine is the fun, fruity choice.
No, mine is...
And yours is the choice that's going to blow up.
No, it's not. Mine.
It is.
Mine is the choice that's ready to go and do track days.
Yeah, for like 4 laps, like Tom said.
It is. All you need to do, you've got 500 quid left, stick the operated intercooler on, you're not going
to
have an issue.
You're going to have to buy an engine for 500 quid. Mm. On this occasion, with all the evidence in front of me, and you will have to agree or disagree, Tom, I'm going to have to give it to you.
I think on the
my RX-8 is fantastic, but I think this is more track ready. Rory, great car. It's just going to blow up.
It's not going
to
blow up.
It will, but we'll have to let them decide.
Yeah.
Mm. So yeah, three very good options, two very good options, and a mini. Let us know in the email address, which is podcast@autoalexcars.com. Nearly got that wrong, didn't I?
I think you still did.
Dot com. Yeah, dot com. Right, next segment of the podcast is the news. And Rory, over to you.
The news is that fuel prices are coming down.
Oh, that's good news.
Yeah. So apparently the oil price per barrel of oil is going down.
Wow.
Which is meant to bring down the fuel prices by roughly 6p per litre.
Oh,
that's quite good.
Yeah.
Is it though, Tom?
Why wouldn't it be good?
I've done the maths. I've run the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that good. Say you've got a 70-litre tank. You fill it.
Yeah.
You save £4.20 on an entire tank. Say you do 10,000 miles a year. That is a saving of £84.
Okay.
In a year.
And that's on how much MPG?
Well, I don't know. I'm just saying you get 500 miles. Sorry, 500 miles.
So an average car, you're saying?
Well, this is more than average. I mean, 500 miles is quite good from a tank.
Okay.
But that's only a saving of £84. So 6p in isolation looks like a lot. In reality, it's not a lot.
You know, you can't knock it. Alex, it's better to save 85 quid or whatever it is than spend another £85, isn't it?
I don't want to save 6p, Tom. I want to save a pound.
Well, why don't you get a battery car? Oh, you've got one.
Yeah.
It's not been great.
No. That also has no hot or cold start issues.
Yeah, it's because it doesn't start.
When's the last time we actually had that thing driving? It was, what, the November?
Road trip. Yeah, when we did the road trip up
September,
to, from Scotland.
October.
To,
no.
So we've got a Tesla Model S that we parked up in a car park where we have some spaces. And unfortunately, the main battery and the 12-volt battery has died in it, which means we can't get into it.
Yeah.
But don't worry, Tesla, in their infinite wisdom, came up with an emergency pull release.
Oh, fantastic. Let's do that.
You just pull that and it's behind the bumper, then it opens up the front trunk and you can then jump start the 12 volt.
Let's do it.
Tom, do you want to guess what's happened here?
I wanted to tell you something else, but you finished what you're saying.
Okay.
You reminded me of something that happened this week and it's brilliant.
Oh, really? Yeah, oh, fantastic. Yeah.
So me and Taylor went over there. We pulled the cable and the cable just came out.
Oh.
In our hands.
Oh.
It wasn't attached to anything.
Could you not put it back?
No.
Oh.
No. So we did that and then it's just sort of there. And now we can't really move it or do anything with it.
Okay. So without it's just sitting there.
Cutting a hole in it.
Yeah. Well, there will be a V2 video on that. Trying to jumpstart a dead battery car.
Yeah.
Sorry, Tom, what was your story?
You'll like this.
Yeah.
So my mate James Wall.
Yeah.
Has got an XJ, the same as Rory's. He's been on holiday, come back after 2 or 3 weeks because he gets a train and he doesn't use it that much these days. And the battery's gone flat.
Oh.
So I said to James, I said, don't worry. Open up you can get in the door. I said, open up the bonnet, power the car up under the bonnet via the fuse box and da-da-da-da. And you'll be able to open the boot.
Yeah.
Take the battery out.
Yeah.
And then we'll charge it up.
Nice.
We might need a new one and we'll test it.
Easy.
So he powers up under the bonnet with his jump pack or whatever he's got, opens up the boot, disconnects the battery.
Yeah.
Turns around and then the boot lid shuts down on him. They're electric and they normally stay up. I don't know why it's falling down.
Oh, no.
So now he can't make a circuit and he can't open the boot because the terminals aren't connected.
Oh,
no. And we've got to now try and take the rear seat out.
Oh.
And there's a, it's a typical American thing. There's a, what do they call it? A kidnap release.
Is it? I was going to say, there's a ski hatch in the XJ, isn't there?
Yeah. Well, maybe I'll go around to his house and have a look. But he's got himself into a right pickle.
Oh no, poor James.
Poor James.
Yes. Does that mean he won't be able to get to the racetrack and I could take his place?
Yes, that's exactly.
I've got to do my arse this week. Okay. Right.
But yeah. So, but yeah. Batteries. When you know, I mean, what are you going to do with a Tesla?
We're just going to throw it in the sea, Tom.
That's very environmentally friendly of you.
Well, no, we're going to take it out and then put it in a massive like swimming pool of rice and then hopefully it will fix itself.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, but we are going to have a V2 episode where we try and revive that bloody thing and then I'm selling it.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yes, fuel prices are coming down.
That's good.
Yeah.
They're good.
Yeah, it's not as good as it sounds though. 84 quid. It's like, come on, give us more, man. Anyway, there is more good news, is there not? Or is it good news?
About the Nürburgring.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So bikes and cars are no longer going to be sharing the track. Mm. So they had Tourist Fahrten?
Yes.
Which is where everyone can go on the track and sort of use it as, well, it's not a track.
It's a public road. It's a toll road.
Yeah.
And then people can go on it. But for safety reasons, and it is good news, they are now no longer having motorbikes and cars sharing the track at the same time.
Right.
Which is unbelievable that that was a thing, really.
Yeah. So, a bit more depth of that story. So motorcycles will only be able to ride the 21-kilometer Nürburgring Nordschleife under the supervision of trained guides during training sessions and courses. And there are only four full-day sessions planned to be offered in 2025. Mm. So that means bikes and cars will not share the same section of tarmac ever again. Tom, good thing, bad thing?
I think it's a good thing. I don't think that, motorbikes and cars combined in the same, space, driving it or riding at speed is a clever thing. Mm. I've never, I ride race bikes and do all that sort of stuff. And I've also done, I've got a lot of friends that have done TTs and stuff like that. I think that closed road needs to either be motorbikes or cars. And I wouldn't personally ever do the Nürburgring on a motorbike myself. You know, I've been to lots of racetracks. I've done lots of stuff like that. I just think that the price you pay for the mistake in certain areas on that circuit without a roll cage around you is too big a price.
Yeah, there's not enough runoff on a lot of the corners.
There's not enough runoff. There's barriers right there. And I did, back in the early 2000s, there was a guy that we used to go and do a lot of track days with, and he always used to go to the Nürburgring. And yeah, one weekend he didn't come back. Mm. So I'm all for having fun on the racetrack. And, I'm obviously a little bit, my risk taking is, probably more than a lot of people, but I don't think, Nürburgring on a motorbike is definitely not for me.
I think it's not even just the motorbike itself, though, is it? It's, as we were discussing earlier, it's the actual, these people who are driving around you, let's say you're on a motorbike, they aren't pro drivers. These are just normal, your average
This
Joe.
Is you and me.
Yeah. Who could
in cars that probably aren't maintained particularly well.
Well, they're just anything and everything. At least when you go to, a track day or something like that, a lot of the vehicles that are there are going to be well prepared, There is still the odd wally that turns up in something that's completely knackered. But,
Tom was gesturing at Alex.
Yes. For everyone listening to this, a very large hammy hand was pointed at me.
Yeah. So, I just don't, I've been there on plenty of track days where people have made errors and mistakes, which have then cost other people dearly, i.e. they've crashed into them because you're an innocent bystander and you've been knocked off your motorbike or crashed into by another car when you've actually done nothing wrong yourself. You always have to accept that risk when you go onto a race circuit. And I think that the risk at the Nürburgring because of the safety, for me personally, isn't worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally agree. Yeah, I'm all for it as well. Yeah, bikes and cars should not mix, especially on the Nürburgring.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, what other racetrack in the world would you have bikes and cars?
It's
I'm not saying that it's a racetrack, but people do use it as a racetrack.
I think the problem is there's motorbikes have an ability to be really quick in certain sections, but not so in others.
The speed differential is ridiculous. You know, like if you're driving, like we were saying earlier, if you're on a Nürburgring, you are looking ahead. Yeah, and then if a motorbike comes up the inside of you, outbraking you, and then you've got more grip, and then you're faster through the corner, and you know there's just, you know, the bike will probably on a straight ultimately get away because their acceleration's amazing, but the biker is going to try harder through the corners where you're going to be able to match them a little bit more, and it's just you know, when a bike's cranked over on its side and the guy's got his knee on the deck, and you're in your car, you can't. See him?
No, not at all.
Yeah, if he's up the inside,
you're 3 foot off the ground, then, aren't you? Pretty much.
Yeah. He's virtually going to be below your door line.
It's like me standing up.
Yeah, I know.
Like,
I
got there before Tom.
It's like you sat in the Yeti.
Like me sat in the Yeti. Bloody hell! Yeah.
But yeah, no. It's just got. High risk. You know, unnecessary accident written all over it.
Yes, indeed, indeed. Yeah, so good news then. Good news all
very
around.
Very good news.
The final section of this week's podcast is question of the week that was sent in by Thomas Gibson. And he says, and it's very fortuitous actually that you're here, Tom. Mm-hmm. Hi guys, I bought a Land Rover Discovery 4 less than a year ago. And then in the last few days, it started knocking and the crankshaft has gone. Could I get any engine swap ideas from you guys, Thomas? Actually, Rory, maybe you're a good one to start.
So we were actually looking at this because we have Big Pete. Big Pete, unfortunately, is having now engine issues. The one thing we have not got left.
You don't know yet.
Tom, it's going into limp mode repeatedly.
Also, Rory, you promised me everything was done. The engine would be fine. Yeah,
I said everything but the engine. So,
Big Pete's done 192,000 miles now.
I know. See, it is a lot of miles, isn't it?
Yeah, he's done well, to be fair.
So I was looking and
done
there was...
well for me.
It really has, yeah. So before you get into that, what is the issue? Tom, maybe you can answer this. What is the issue with Disco 4s and their engines?
Okay, so there is definitely a crankshaft problem that has been highlighted over the years. And in fact, there was even Jaguar and Land Rover technical bulletin on 3 liter crankshafts having a problem and the shell spinning up. Mm. Yeah, so there was definitely a build issue, which then got sorted out later on. But yeah, there's an era of engines where crankshafts were definitely a problem.
Okay.
Yeah. So it wasn't the actual. I'm sure it was the shells that was it. It was to do with an out of alignment oil feed.
Okay.
And I can't remember. I think it was the shells that were the oil feed hole was in the wrong place, and therefore it was starving the crankshaft of oil, and then it was locking up.
Okay,
from memory, I'd have to look it up, but it was in that sort of stuff.
Okay,
and also the crankshafts also had a habit of snapping.
Really,
literally, physically snapping. So we were getting you turn it over by hand, and you think, oh, actually, it's all right, but there was only like two or three of the pistons moving.
And I take it two or three pistons cannot move a 3-ton motor vehicle.
No. So so there was definitely, that bizarrely, might have been the extra load of the heavier vehicle. The problems were not isolated, but far, far more common in the Land Rover products than the Jaguar product.
So what engine did was in the Jaguar?
Same engine.
Okay. So and was that what XJ?
So that's what's in my car.
That's what you got in your car. Yeah.
You need to sell it. Yeah. Sell it. I'll the way you it. Drive it, I've seen you. Oh, yeah. Sorry, Tom.
I said I'll buy it. I've always told him about it. How many miles has your car done now?
I think it's 152,000.
Yeah.
How many miles have you done in that?
I think I've now done, bearing in mind, I've only had it, what? It was December I got it off you, Tom? Last December?
Yeah, so what, a year and 3 months?
Year and 3 months I've done... 36,000, 37,000 miles.
Was it on 117?
Yeah, it was like
something like that.
Pretty
good
going.
It's not bad considering that is not even the car that I use every day as well. No. It's not bad.
Yeah,
I'll take it.
Yeah. And you did take it.
I did.
So, Rory, what's a good engine to put into a Disco 4 then? Because there is a company, isn't there?
So there is a company called MDRS. They are up north. But they put in the TDV8s from Range Rovers, mm-hmm. which is notoriously actually good engines.
Yeah.
And they put them in disco threes and fours.
Oh. Yeah. So why wasn't that the case off the production line?
So I also then researched this as well to find out why. And it's apparently Jaguar and Land Rover, in their wisdom, they thought that by putting the, what you call it, the TDV8 in a Discovery 4 or 3 would then take sales away from Range Rovers.
Yeah.
Which it probably would have done.
Yeah, it would have done.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't have had all of these issues.
No, no. And the thing that's really annoying is they had the engine. The TDV8 is actually a very, very good engine.
And very well suited to the disco, isn't it?
Yeah. We always say it, whenever we have this conversation about diesel Range Rovers and stuff, I always say, get the V8. Don't get the V6, get the V8.
Yeah.
You know, it's because they don't, yes, there are things that go wrong around the outside of them, but generally speaking, they don't go wrong. They're just good engines.
So, like the 4.4 that started all the way back in the L322.
Mm. Brilliant.
That went all the way, they've only stopped it in 2018, 2019 or something?
Meg has got last of line 4.4 V8. It's 2001, her car.
2021. Yeah. So over 12 years they've been putting that engine. That same engine.
That was the last year of the 405 LG.
Maybe I do need to buy a Range Rover.
Then they went to the new model, they didn't do the V8 anymore. She wanted the last of the V8, so that's what she got.
Fair play. Go check out a company called MDRS. That is to Thomas Gibson or anyone else who's got a Disco 4.
I'm actually going to go and have a look myself.
Are you actually?
Well, I have actually got a Disco 4 sat in the yard, which I bought the other day.
Yeah.
With a 3-litre engine in it. It's done 150 odd thousand miles. It's blown up.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of debating what to do with it. And now that I didn't know this was a thing.
Oh, okay.
We've taught
Tom something. Yeah,
it's great. I am very, very tempted to see if they do a conversion kit.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I can get hold of an engine. I might have a go at it.
Oh, that would be very interesting. Yeah. And then maybe we could put one in Big Pete as well, once you've ironed out all
the... Once I've been through the pain.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. All right, then. I hope everyone's enjoyed listening to this podcast. Also listening to Tom's very illustrious career and story.
Thank you for having me. It's been good to get
under the skin of Tom Lenthal. please write in and give us a question of the week, and also find my car as well. Give us some more suggestions of that. The email is
podcast@autoalexcars.com.
And from us, thank you again for the support. We're loving being back doing the podcast, and we've got more special guests coming up. Next week, it'll be the three of us again with Taylor.
Yes, with Taylor, yeah.
And then after that, a special guest, which will be...
Yes.
Perfect. Yeah, still not done that one. But for now, thank you very much, Tom Lenthal, for joining us on the sofa.
No worries. It's been
a pleasure having you. And again, thank you very much for letting me drive your XJS. And I am going to do my odds, and we are going to race together.
I bet you any money you don't. You're going to say you're going to do it, but you won't do it.
No, what?
Can you imagine if I do my... Don't you dare. If I do my odds, and if my lap times are quicker than Tom's...
That's what happened with James Wool, wasn't it?
Is it really? Okay.
Yeah.
And then it'll be me and James, and you'll have to be... You'll be our mechanic.
The first race, he did 1,200 miles on the sim.
What? Wow.
The first race he done.
Oh, my God.
1,200
I'm not going to do that. I know you're not going to do that, no. And with that, thank you very much for listening and watching. Whatever you do, do it to the best of your ability, and we will see you and hear you and listen and shout at you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.
Keep waving, Tom.
Oh, sorry.
Bye.
realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.